It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
places like Washington, D.C. should be an example to cities and police departments in the rest of the country and show that it's really not necessary to come down so hard on these protesters, and really the more American thing to do is to allow freedom of expression to take place, especially when it's such a widespread grassroots movement such as this one.
It was a public forum like a Greek agora where 24 hours a day you could have involved discussions, and that's one of the most beautiful things about the movement is that it's not necessarily just about immediate answers, but trying to figure out where we can go and what could be done. And so I would say that this was a reasonable time and place.
I would also like to add that because we're dealing with a fundamental liberty interest in the First Amendment, that reasonable restriction on time, place, and manner, it must be the least restrictive means. And so to arbitrarily set a time like the sunset, that perhaps is not the least restrictive means.
American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia attorney Rebecca Glenberg and Occupy Richmond legal team members Cayman Mooney and Danielle Lewis discuss the legal aspects of freedom of assembly and the right to petition the government for redress of grievances in light of the dismantlement of Occupy Richmond's encampment 2 days ago. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn how the Affordable Care Act gives seniors with Medicare cheaper prescription drugs, free preventative services, and lower costs. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 145, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, is encouraging people with Medicare to begin reviewing drug and health plan coverage options for 2012. The Medicare open enrollment period, which began October 15 and ends on Wednesday, December 7, gives seniors and people with disabilities more time to compare and find the best plan that meets their unique needs. Thanks to the Affordable Care Act, people with Medicare can get certain preventative services for free and can get more affordable prescription drugs. Open enrollment is seniors' chance to review their Medicare choices and pick the plan that works for them, or keep the plan they have today. During open enrollment, people with Medicare can review the 2012 quality ratings for Medicare Advantage health plans, Part C, and prescription drug plans, Part D, for the upcoming year. This year, CMS is highlighting plans that have achieved an overall quality rating of 5 stars with a high performer or gold star icon, so people with Medicare can easily find high-quality plans. People with Medicare can switch to an available 5-star plan at any time during the year. For more information, go to www.medicare.gov. In other news, on September 22, when new poverty figures were released by the Census Bureau, people learned that the city of Richmond's poverty rate in 2010 stood at 25.8%, up from 18.1% in 2000, and the highest since the Census Bureau first began recording poverty back in 1970. However, poverty no longer is confined to the city, and there are more people living in poverty in the suburbs than in the city. Moreover, the growth in poverty rates is far greater in the counties. From 2000 to 2010, the city of Richmond's rate increased by 5%. By contrast, Hanover County's rate grew by 39%, Chesterfield County's rate by 71%, and Henrico County's rate by 94%. Last spring, Richmond Mayor Dwight Jones created an anti-poverty commission with membership including elected leaders from Chesterfield and Henrico counties. The commission is charged with developing strategies to address poverty that have demonstrable results for increasing employment and educational attainments, improving transportation, and enhancing healthy communities. Public policy recommendations are due by the spring of 2012. The focus on poverty is critical, though not new. We should never forget that in the last few years before he was assassinated, Martin Luther King Jr. turned his attention from racial justice and toward economic justice. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Valley Acceptance Corporation versus Glaspie. In 1976 and 1979, two homeowners responded to advertisements that Valley Acceptance made mortgage loans and borrowed small amounts, less than the ceilings of the Small Loan Act. They agreed to pay various fees and an interest rate of about 30% and gave mortgages to secure the loans. However, Valley Acceptance was not licensed to make such small loans. Both the City of Roanoke Circuit Court and the Supreme Court of Virginia found that the loans were unsuccessful attempts to avoid the Small Loan Act and that the corporation had violated the act. The court held that where the amount borrowed falls below the ceiling contained in the act, it is subject to the act even if it is described as a mortgage loan. Even if the lender is not licensed, the act applies if the lender attempts to evade it. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault. And Valley Acceptance Corporation versus Glaspie is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
We're here at the American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia. We are speaking with attorney Rebecca Glenberg, and we are going to be talking today about the right of the people to peaceably assemble and petition the government for redress of grievances, especially in light of the displacement of the Occupy Richmond protesters from Kanawha Plaza a mere 2 days ago. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Well, now, Rebecca, you got on the one hand the First Amendment to the Constitution, which is applicable to the states by the 14th Amendment, which says Congress shall make no law abridging the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And on the other hand, you have Richmond City Code Section 26-390, quote, it shall be unlawful for any person to camp, tent, and camp or quarter upon any public grounds, parks, playfields, playgrounds, or any public property owned or maintained by the city or lie upon any benches located within any such public property, unquote. It seems to me that the Constitution of the United States clearly trumps a city ordinance. Why is this not the case?
Well, the protesters are occupying a public park. The Supreme Court has said that public parks, in addition to the sidewalks and the streets, are what they call traditional public forums. In these forums, the government's right to restrict speech is at its lowest, and the right of the people to engage in speech is at its peak in these traditional public forums. However, the Supreme Court has also said that the government may enact reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions on the use of public forums, even for free expression. And these time, place, and manner restrictions simply have to be content and viewpoint neutral, that is, not favor one view over another in restricting speech, and need to be reasonable under the circumstances. So this camping restriction is what the Supreme Court would probably call a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction, in that it's not telling protesters what they can say, only how they can say it, and specifically that they not speak by camping out in a public place. And this sort of restriction has been specifically upheld, in fact, by the Supreme Court. There was a regulation that prohibited camping on the Capitol Mall, and the Supreme Court upheld that regulation against protesters who were building tents and trying to camp out on the mall to protest homelessness.
But I thought that the traditional test for limiting one of these First Amendment rights, whether it is speech, religion, the press, or assembly, was the government had to demonstrate, quote, a compelling state interest. Is that not the standard that the Supreme Court has applied when it says that a government, city or county or state government, can regulate the time, place, and manner of restrictions on freedom of assembly?
Well, the compelling interest case applies when the government is trying to regulate content. It does not necessarily apply to these time, place, and manner restrictions, where the test, I believe, is that the regulation be narrowly tailored to a substantial government interest, which is a lesser standard than the compelling government interest one. In the case of camping, the government upheld the regulation because the government had an interest in maintaining public safety and public health, which they felt might be diminished by people using the public places for eating and going to the bathroom and so forth, and also to ensure that the public spaces were available to everyone and not taken over by a particular group for a substantial period of time.
In this situation, though, wouldn't there be some sort of equal protection argument? As we know, around the country, the local officials are responding in widely different manners. In Oakland, of course, we've seen the tear gas and the flash grenades. On the other hand, and as the ACLU's of Virginia's letter to Mayor Jones from October 18th said, in many places, local officials have not only cooperated with demonstrators, but also extended a helping hand in order to ensure free speech is protected. In Washington, D.C., the National Park Service has said that Occupy Washington may continue to camp in Freedom Plaza for 4 months. In Cleveland, city officials not only granted protesters a special events permit to allow them to erect tents, but members of the police force donated tents for them to use. So you've got the same constitution across the whole country, but in some areas the officials are respecting the right to peacefully assemble. In other areas, they're not. Isn't that an equal protection problem?
Well, I think that the experiences of places like Washington, D.C. show that it's really more fruitful to respect people's right to assemble and to show some flexibility rather than coming down in a heavy-handed fashion as they did in Oakland. I'm not sure that I would call it a constitutional problem that people are being treated differently in different places, because each of these demonstrations is being governed by a different city, a different state, and a different police department. And so it's not as though one government authority is treating people differently. However, it certainly is the case that places like Washington, D.C. should be an example to cities and police departments in the rest of the country and show that it's really not necessary to come down so hard on these protesters. And really the more American thing to do is to allow freedom of expression to take place, especially when it's such a widespread grassroots movement such as this one.
Now, I understand that 2 days ago, about a dozen to 15 of the protesters involved with Occupy Richmond were arrested by the police. would they potentially have a defense to whatever it is they're charged with?
They can argue that they were within their First Amendment rights because they were peaceably assembling and they were not creating any sort of disruption. However, as I said, probably the camping restriction is a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction that a court might uphold against a First Amendment challenge. Another argument they might use is if they're charged with trespassing, which I think I read might be a particular charge that's used against them. In Virginia, if you have a good faith belief that you have a right to be in a place, that is a defense to trespassing. And so perhaps even if the First Amendment is found not to apply to these protesters, the fact that they had a good faith belief that they were acting consistent with the First Amendment may be a defense to the trespass charge.
Okay, thank you very much. We have been speaking with ACLU of Virginia attorney Rebecca Glenberg about the recent displacement of Occupy Richmond protesters from Kanawha Plaza and how that interfaces with the federally guaranteed constitutional right of the people to peacefully assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Marching up the freedom land.
We've just been speaking with ACLU of Virginia attorney Rebecca Glenberg about the free assembly aspects of Occupy Richmond and the dismantling of the camp by the Richmond police 2 days ago. We are now speaking with two members of the Occupy Richmond legal team, Cayman Mooney and Danielle Lewis. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Glad to be here, Marty.
Thank you.
Now, tell us exactly what happened. What went down 2 days ago?
About 1 a.m., I received a phone call from members of the legal team who were actually on site, who had said that we had been surrounded by police cars, waste management vehicles, fire engine, just lots and lots of police presence, and that they were getting ready to enter the park. By the time that I entered the park at 1:20, the police had seized everyone who were inside of the park and had ordered everyone who was just getting to the park to stay onto the sidewalk. They gave us an hour to get all of our things out. That hour ended up being about 20 minutes. Everything else that was in the park was bulldozed.
Now, when I was speaking with Ms. Glenberg, she said that there's a tension between the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which says that Congress shall pass no law abridging the right of the people to peacefully assemble and petition the government for redress of grievances, and the City of Richmond City Code, Section 26-390, which says it shall be unlawful for any person to camp, tent, and camp or quarter upon any public grounds, parks, playfields, playgrounds, or any public property or maintained by the city or lie upon any benches located within any such property. And apparently, even though the ACLU strongly defends freedom of assembly, they noted that the Supreme Court of the United States has upheld restrictions on the time, place, and manner of assembling. Do you think that the restrictions that were imposed here were reasonable?
I would disagree with that assertion. I mean, so you do have the time, manner, and reasonable place portion of it, but then you also have the public forum doctrine. A public park is sort of the golden example of what is a public forum. It's a place where anyone can go, anyone can speak, anyone can stand in their soapbox. And this being Kanawha Plaza, it's not exactly an area where you're burdening people. I understand that you have other people have rights in this city, but this is not really a place where you're infringing on anyone's rights. The end result was people were being fed 3 meals a day. The homeless were being given tents. They're being given blankets. It was a public forum like a Greek agora where 24 hours a day you could have involved discussions. And that's one of the most beautiful things about the movement is that it's not necessarily just about immediate answers, but trying to figure out where we can go and what could be done. And so I would say that this was a reasonable time and place.
I would also like to add that because we're dealing with a fundamental liberty interest in the First Amendment, that reasonable restriction on time, place, and manner, it must be the least restrictive means. And so to arbitrarily set a time like the sunset, that perhaps is not the least restrictive means. In fact, currently in Virginia appellate court, there is a suit challenging the sunset policy right now that will be heard on November 3rd. So there is an argument to be made that the time restriction restrictions that are based on sunset and sunrise actually aren't the least restrictive means that a fundamental liberty interest would entail.
And was there any concern expressed either by the police at the time or by the mayor beforehand when he visited on Thursday that there was some sort of health or safety issue involved here?
No, in fact, we were told by health inspectors that had come on site and also by members of the special events unit that it was the cleanest that they had seen Kanawha Plaza in a long time. There were no health issues. There were no safety issues. We were actually creating a community that was of a benefit to Richmond City.
Where do you expect Occupy Richmond to go from here, and why do you think it's important for this movement to continue?
Well, as far as the second question, I feel like this act is sort of confirming the original thesis that we have too many interests that are high-powered as far as their economic strength that decide things. And so we have juxtaposed, someone posted on the blog this morning about this, the Steven Spielberg movie that they're allowed to make encampments in the city. They're allowed to have the city not mow the grass in certain areas. They're allowed to block roads. But the difference is that they're paying a significant amount of money. Meanwhile, you've got the Tea Party that's complaining that they had to pay for a permit and that therefore we should have. Well, that's a non sequitur on two points. The first being that, well, why should you have to pay to protest? That's talking about commoditization of protesting. And this is a free speech issue, not a we need to pay someone in order to express ourselves issue. And at the same time, we were not allowed to have a permit. The original promise was that it would be Kanawha Plaza, we'd be allowed to have our tents, we'd be allowed to stay overnight, we would have porta-potties, we would have dumpsters. And the police, we were working with them to make this proposal. But then, next thing you know, that Friday night, Mayor Dwight Jones, he pulls that out from under them. And then he rejects a permit. City Council rejects an emergency motion for it. And so we played by the rules. We did everything that we could. We stayed on the sidewalk until we were given the go-ahead to stay in the park and to set up tents. And so we did everything that we could to follow the rules and go by the book, but the city didn't give us the opportunity.
And I understand that has not been the case in other cities around the country and other cities in Virginia. I know Washington, D.C., they can stay for 4 months. Cleveland, they're actually being provided tents, which of course contrasts very sharply with Atlanta or Oakland, where we see the flash grenades and the tear gas, or what we saw at Kanawha Plaza 2 days ago. What's happening other places in Virginia?
Well, I know that in Charlottesville and also in Norfolk, the city councils have suspended anti-camping laws, which were the one law that those movements were violating in order to allow the freedom of expression and of assembly. We had recently pinpointed, in fact, on Thursday, when the mayor had come into our encampment, we had pinpointed a section of the Virginia Code that allowed us to go to the director of the city parks and recreations and receive special permission to stay in the park outside of the sunset, sunrise prohibition. But when we went to meet with the city director of parks and recreation, he was not in, and then we were raided. So we were attempting to go through all of the processes that, through the law, we've appealed to city council members, we've appealed to Mayor Jones, we've appealed to members of the police department, who have been very encouraging towards us, but at the same time, this ended in the destruction of supplies, tents, donated items that had been sent from throughout the country to us. And in the long run, we wonder exactly what the point of all of this was. Hopefully, we will be reoccupying another location any day now. So in the long run, this was a waste not only of taxpayer money and also of police time and presence where they could have been fighting actual crime, but it was also a really harsh illustration of the fight that we are fighting. This actually proves the necessity for the occupation itself.
We stood up for all of the Arab revolts of last winter and this summer. And so if it had been the case of, let's say, China shooting tear gas on people who are peacefully protesting for no good reason, it would have been an uproar. Our Secretary of State would have said how bad this is. But meanwhile, our own political protesters, we are saying that, no, this is not acceptable, and we will use brutal tactics to shut you down.
Thank you very much. We have been speaking with Occupy Richmond legal team leaders, Cayman Mooney and Danielle Lewis about the recent dismantlement of the Occupy Richmond encampment at Kanawha Plaza and plans to keep the movement alive. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 32.1, which deals with health. Code of Virginia Section 32.1-345 states that each city and county in the Commonwealth shall participate in the state and local hospitalization or SLH program for indigent persons, and the city or county's share of the cost shall be up to 25% of the total cost. What is strange is that the SLH program has been suspended because the 2010 state budget bill passed by the General Assembly and signed by the governor did not include funding for the program from July 1, 2010 through June 30, 2012. Despite this, every city and county in Virginia is required to participate in a program that no longer exists. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. On October 31, 2011, new State Corporation Commission regulations took effect that limit when investor-owned electric utilities, electric cooperatives, or public utilities providing water service can disconnect service to the home of a consumer with a serious medical condition. Join us next week when Christy Mara, housing law attorney at the Virginia Poverty Law Center, describes these literally life-saving new rules. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegman.